Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR, Sirius XM Channel 141, 96.3 HD2 and 98.3 FM. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher.
We need to keep him alive. He needs to have his mother tell him what to do.
Franklin's F-R-A-N-K-L-I-N, like Roosevelt.
Franklin, as in Aretha.
Run, Moses. Run for your life.
Stop! Now this man's going.
We have to protect ourselves.
That is part of the trailer for the new crime court drama 61st Street, streaming on AMC+. It features a public defender representing a high school track star who gets swept up in the Chicago criminal justice system. The actor playing the public defender is the amazing Courtney B. Vance. He may be best known as ADA Carver on Law & Order Criminal Intent, as well as the husband of the amazing Angela Bassett. So much talent in one household, I can't stand it. Tonight, we talk to Vance about his new drama, his career, and so much more. Lines are open. Give us a call at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. You can tweet me at HFisherWHUR or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Courtney B. Vance, thank you so much for talking to us and joining the program.
Thank you for having me, Howard. Harold, I'm so excited to be here.
Oh, not as excited
so
as
excited
I am.
To talk to you.
Not as excited as I am. You know, I'm not a starstruck person. I've been doing this a really long time. But I have to tell you that your acting gives me goosebumps. It really, really does. You are an amazing, amazing performer. I am a Law and Order junkie from the original all the way up to Criminal Intent and beyond. And of course, that's where a lot of people know you. But I want to, even before we get into that, I do want to talk about 61st Street.
Mm-hmm.
Because this is a gritty court drama. It is an amazing piece of work. Talk to me about your character.
Well, Mr. Franklin Roberts is, as you described, is a public defender for 30 years and is about to retire. And he asks his wife if he's made a difference. Does she think he's made a difference in the 30 years? And she said, the system is a system, honey. You're a good man and you've done the best you can, but the system, not one person's going to change the system. So come on home and help me take care of our 16-year-old autistic son, and I'm gonna segue out into politics, and you've got to replace me at home, and we're gonna switch. And I'm down with that, and we're having a wonderful evening, and you know, just not thinking about anything but the Friday night and having fun, and just like, you know, everybody does on Friday nights, people gonna knows what that's like, just looking forward to the weekend. And life happens. You know, I find out that Moses Johnson, the young man who everyone in the community knows is not affiliated with any gangs, even though his father is the man. And I'm 30 years ago, I remember when he got put down and he's in the prison now. That's his dad. That's Moses' father. But Moses himself is a track star, and is the next morning he's going off to college, and everyone knows he's don't touch him, leave him alone, and he's going to represent our community in the world. And you know, he's crossing through gang territory and gets caught up in a sting by the police, and he runs, because that's what one does when one feels threatened. One runs, even though he hasn't done anything. He knows, as a black man, you don't have to have done anything to for the police to kill you. So he runs, and in the course of a struggle, a policeman is killed. So things happen in life that for such a time as this. Everything, his whole life comes down to this one moment. What are you going to do? How, based on how you respond in this situation, your life will spin. And he chooses life. He chooses to defend this young man no matter what is going to, the cost to him are going to be. And they're going to be high. He may lose his family. He may lose his life. But that's how much his word and his character, what a person of his character he is. So it's, you know, it's a, the lines are drawn, and we'll, the series is about the man and his character, and whether one person can make a difference. As, and I think Rosa Parks would have one word to that: nah. you know, I love the T-shirt. Nah, 1955, Rosa Parks. So, you know, he's the Rosa Parks of his generation, and he decides to, instead of sitting down, he decides to stand up.
Michael B. Jordan is the executive producer for this. You're a seasoned actor. What is it like to collaborate with this incredible talent?
Well, Michael, what he did for us is he lent his name in order for us to get this piece off the ground. Michael his former production company head, Miss Alana Mayo, was with us on and off, making sure everything was fine, reporting back to Michael that everything was going well, and we had boots on the ground. As a production showrunner, Mr. J. David Shanks, who was reporting to Alana when she wasn't there, and of course Peter Moffat, the creator. So it was an amazing collaboration. I mean, I read two episodes, met with David and Peter, and committed to it once I saw that their level of commitment, what it was. So, you know, this is, you know, it's a faith walk. Ultimately, it's a faith walk. You know, I didn't ask where the character goes. I didn't ask, you know, where he ends up at the end of the first season, how he begins in the second season, where does he end up in the end of the second season, is there going to be a third season, you know, I didn't ask any of those questions. I just said, are you all in, basically, because that's what it's going to take, what it was going to take to do a project like this, and it was going to take that from everybody. But it started out, it has to start with Peter and J. David and Alana Mayo. So once I was assured of that, I was doing my thing. I went all in, and the result of that is what you see on the screen. Based on the top folks going all in, everyone else saw what was happening and committed themselves, much like Franklin Roberts does. We all committed ourselves to the journey.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. I am talking to actor Courtney B. Vance, well known for his courtroom dramas and his latest effort, 61st Street, streaming on AMC Plus. If you have a comment or a question, give us a call. Let's go to WB. Calling from Northeast D.C. WB, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Mr. Fisher, how you doing this evening?
You have no idea how I'm doing right now talking to Courtney B. Vance.
Mr. Vance, how you doing? Welcome to Washington.
I'm so grateful to be in D.C., living, sitting in L.A. in my apartment and being in my house and being in being transported to D.C. I feel something akin to an out-of-body experience.
Well, to me, you have the most, I think being an actor, I watched you on reruns here in Washington and Baltimore, so it's a blessing to have you here in Washington. But my question is, how do you balance your Hollywood career with that fine wife of yours, Angela Bassett?
See, he took my question.
I do it by, I learned early on, by asking the question, what can I do? How can I help? what do you need me to do? I learned the hard way that it's not about me, it's about her.
Mm.
And once a man turns around, everything being equal, once a woman notices that a man is focused on God first, her second, they hopefully will turn around and serve you the way you need to be served. So that's what happened with us. I recognized the hard way in that I had to focus. Once the man is the head, but the woman is the neck, and the head don't go nowhere unless the neck turns. So I am the head, and my wife moves me around. So I'm a happy man.
Well, I'll tell you what, Mr. Vance. Bow down to the queen.
Hey, how about that?
Amen.
Thank you, Mr. Fishing. I'm
sure
out.
Thing. WB, thank you so much. I was about to say, we've seen your wife's work on the screen, and I've seen that neck work. So,
amen.
And, you know, piggybacking on that, and I will get into your business just, you know, a little bit, but you said you learned it the hard way. Why do you say it was the hard way?
Well, because I don't think we did 9 weeks of premarital counseling, and I thought I was ready, but I wasn't ready. When the rubber meets the road, it really is about, you know, submission and how that focusing on God first and her watching me focus on him and still doing all the things I needed to do, bringing, you know, making sure that the groceries were in the house and the food was cooked, and at least, you know, the food was in the house for it to be cooked if she was cooking during the period if she wasn't working, and making sure if I was working, going to work, doing my job and coming home, and then I always say I go to work to rest and come home to work. So my honey-do list is prodigious.
How about that?
And then the children came. So, you know, I was in prep mode to get ready for the increased load on my shoulders. And, you know, I really am grateful to her for teaching me that there's power in submission. So I am I'm a walking testament to, you know, what can I do? How can I help? We are called to be kind and helpful. And so I'm, you know, and based on that, I once she's all set and she says, I'm good, Court. I'm out working. I'm doing whatever I need to do, whatever somebody else needs me to do, whatever I need to do for myself. So, you know, God first, her second, my children the third, work is fourth, and hallelujah, I am fifth.
You know, I you said something that, you know, that really kind of, you know, touched me, because we talk about this on this program a lot, and I even talk about it. You talk about kindness and mm-hmm. how that works within the relationship. Mm-hmm. Big part of it, I would imagine, not just you to her, but her to you.
But it starts with me. It starts with, if you're going to be the head and apologizing. If I'm gonna be the head and saying I'm sorry, or saying or is there anything I can do? I'll never make more money than my wife.
Okay.
It's not about money. It's about, you know, emotionally helping her where she needs it, mm-hmm. and then helping shore up the family and helping her. There's certain things. Everybody has their gifts. Everybody does things. She does things. You know, has a gifting in certain areas that I don't have. You know, I have giftings in certain areas she don't have, and we cover each other.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way it should be. I don't like drama, but if a difficult conversation needs to be had, I'm a step up. I'm the head. I'm a step up and have that conversation
mm-hmm.
because it needs to be had. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that somebody's got to be that person. I at the beginning of our relationship, I said, you know, to my godly counselor at the time, I said, why do I have to be the adult? Why can't she come and do for me? He said, because my godly counselor said, Courtney, because that's who you marry. Mm-hmm. Now, what you going to do?
You hear this scratching. I'm taking notes. here.
What you gonna do, homie? That's who you married. So you
got to
step up. Now, step up.
Step up. Yes, step up. Indeed. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We are talking to actor Courtney B. Vance about his latest project and his career and all things, one of the greatest dramatic actors of our time. Yes, I said it, and I dare you to challenge me. Let me go to Omar. Omar, calling from Toronto, Canada.
Yes, sir.
Omar, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Normally, I call from D.C., but I'm in Toronto right now. I'm still listening to your show.
Well, thank you.
Thank you. Gentlemen, good day to you both. When I saw the cover of the TV series, I couldn't help it. The first thing came to my mind was Johnny Cochran. They tried to make you look like Johnny Cochran as much as possible. And then that was just amazing, the late Johnny Cochran. So I don't know if you agree with me or not. John Adams said, the least an accused should lack in a democracy is a good counsel. Mm. And that's something that everyone is entitled to under a democracy. That's what John Adams said. And the show, I love the show. I mean, I always watch each episode twice. Mm. It's just amazing. It's just, you learn a lot from it. And it's kind of give you a better perspective of how things happen unexpectedly. You know, as a young man, who was in trouble. But things happen to you. Like, the moment chooses you. You don't choose the moment. And that's what exactly show talks about. My question to you, what is it that you think our justice system lack right now? Is there anything that our justice system is lacking right now? When I take your answer out before. Thank you.
So before you answer that question, I need to take a break. But Omar, hang on, because as we switch over, I want to make sure that you do hear the conversation. Nikki, calling from Suitland, we're going to talk to you. Jimmy from Bowie, you're up next as well. We are talking to actor Courtney B. Vance. We're going to take a break, but don't forget, you can hear every edition of the Daily Drum Inside segment via podcast on WHUR.com. Download the 96.3 HD2 app on your smartphone and hear the program live in its entirety. Stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM Channel 141, 96.3 HD2, and 98.3 FM. I'm Harold Fisher. John Mons is next with the original Quiet Storm. That's on WHUR. We'll be back in just a few seconds. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on WHUR, Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We're talking to actor Courtney B. Vance about his latest project, 61st Street, and his career. If you have a comment, if you have a question, give us a call. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. If you're having difficulty getting through, I promise I will get to your call. Just keep trying. So before the break, Mr. Vance, Omar was asking about the criminal justice system and what you believe is lacking. You've had a lot of practice playing characters in the courtroom. ADA Carver, Johnny Cochran, Franklin character now. Your thoughts about what he asked?
I think what the problem with the system is that the system is, and the police are geared to do what the police have been geared to do since the founding of this country, which is to keep black folks in line. There's 90%, I believe 90%, 95% of policemen are wonderful, decent, people who are here to protect and serve. But the institution was initially created to keep their foot on black folks' neck, and to pardon the pun. But that needs to be, and the system, the entire justice system, which is why we end up having situations where, hello?
Yeah, we're here. We're listening. Go right ahead.
Where you have situations where it's obvious that there was a problem. The black person had been wronged, but you see the Emmett Till situation, and the system is geared toward even if the evidence is presented that, you know, Rodney King, that there was the video was there, but the police still walk. So, the OJ situation, all these situations are, I believe, are opportunities for us to begin to talk to each other, to begin to understand that we're different, that as President Emerita Jeanetta Cole of Spelman said, you got to talk about your differences until your differences don't make a difference. Hmm. We're different. And if we try to pretend that the system is geared toward everybody, that everybody's equal, we know that this is Animal Farm. Some people are more equal than others. Hmm. And so you have to, and the evidence is right in front of you. It took one little girl to be abducted for an Amber Alert to be on every milk carton in the United States. It took 150 young black men and women killed in Atlanta before it was even noticed. So the institution of Black Lives Matter was just saying that. We're not trying to say that all people matter. They do, but in this world that we live in, it's Animal Farm. Some people are more worthy than others, depending on whatever, whether it's you're a celebrity, whether it's money, it's evident. We see it. We see that. Who are you going to believe? Me or your lying eyes? There was a capital insurrection. Somebody initiated that. Somebody had the police stand down. But it's clear that there is an issue that needs to be addressed in terms of talking, but we won't even talk about it. We won't even, we'll get to the point where we are now. Now it's a fight about, the stories about what the history is.
Yeah.
1619, we're just saying, let's talk about what Jefferson and Washington were about. They were men of their times, great men, but they were all men of their times. That everyone was slaving back then. It was a huge, huge thing. So to try to pretend like the cherry tree, stop it. Stop talking about the cherry tree. I want to talk about the man so that we can begin to heal, understand, and begin to talk and begin to come to an understanding and heal. There's only one country in the world where you have a civil war and the people that lost, statues are erected.
Yeah.
Ain't no statues in East Germany of Hitler.
Yeah.
And Goering, there's no statues for them. So it's we're schizophrenic, greatest country in the world, but schizophrenic. We're a family, and we need to sit down and talk about our mess. Every family has mess.
Yeah.
We messy, but we want to pretend like we're not messy. We're messy, and that capital insurrection was the epitome of it. We're messy.
Let me go back to the phone lines real quick. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Nikki, calling from Suitland. Nikki, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Thank you for having me. I'm so honored to be able to talk to you, Harold. And Mr. Courtney Vance, thank you so much for sharing your gift with us. Keep telling the stories. I'm so excited to see executive producers like Sean Carter and
like Michael B. Jordan and
Michael B. Jordan. It's just awesome to see people pour their resources into something that's meaningful, like telling our stories. And I just want to just say thank you and get off the phone so I can continue to hear you talk that wisdom, Mr. Vance. I love it. And tell your wife, Angela Bassett Vance. Well, I said, God bless her. She has a wonderful man, and I thank you guys for your gifts, for sharing your gifts.
Nikki, thank you so much for your phone call.
Thank you so much.
Jimmy, calling from Bowie. Thanks for calling, Jimmy. What's on your mind?
Good evening, Mr. Fisher, Mr. Vance. Thank you all for doing this topic. I'm going to make a comment, then a question. You mentioned Black Lives Matter. I'm a teacher. The Black Lives Matter curriculum in Howard County, several other counties, is literally anti-black male. If you actually look at the topics that they cover, there's no cover promoting strong black men. I got a son. He is three graduate degrees. One, two, he's working a second one from Georgetown University. Was facing 35 years in prison. Ended up doing 4.5 months. My question to you, Mr. Vance, what did you learn from this project about the character of black men? We know about the system, you know. What did you learn about the character of black men?
I'm a black man, so I know that you know everyone wasn't raised the same way, mm-hmm. and character is built. You know, you're not born with it. You know, I was raised by in a loving environment, mother and father. Mm-hmm. A lot of people don't have that. Mm-hmm. I was encouraged to dream. A lot of people don't have that. So I can only say that. That, you know, some things you have to be put in a situation and taught. You have to be taught how to be a good man and a good woman. You have to be taught. So I see the best in people and understand that everybody was not raised the same way. But as long as you can come to the table with an open mind and a willing heart, you can be taught. You can learn, but if you come to the table saying, I know everything, and you ain't got nothing to teach me, and knowing that, and I know that our you know, we have as much work to do on ourselves as a people as the police do. There is no reason for us to be shooting each other and killing each other. That has to stop. We have to find a way to do that. Now I know it's not a simple situation, but it's something that doesn't help any of us. So, you know, I think that, you know, black men are as a black man, I love my black brothers. You know, and we all need to learn from each other and teach each other. I have my father died of suicide 30 years ago almost. But I've learned that I have to have other fathers, earthly fathers around me, because we all need guidance and we all need a word spoken into us. So, and I'm, you know, I'm 62 years old now. So now I've got a bunch of sons, you know, to be able to give some, if people are willing, young men are willing to impart a couple of nuggets to. You know, I was grateful for all and am grateful for all the men who stood in the gap for me when my daddy took his life. So I am nothing but a product of if you can see it and it's presented to you to dream it, you can be it. Yeah. So, you know, but I understand that everyone doesn't have what I've had growing up. And those formative years are so impactful, you know, those teenage years, those baby years, you know, that someone's there to read to you and to encourage you and to walk with you and to talk with you and to share with you. You know, I had that. And so if you don't have that, I can't expect you to know what it means and to have walked the way I've walked. So, you know, I'm not going to judge nobody based on that. All I know is that we have to do better.
I appreciate that too, sir. I thank you for your resilience. And as a teacher, I've seen too many young black men go to jail who were great young men. But I learned the resilience too. I'm not sure what and I'm going to watch the show, the project, but the resilience of these young black men who innocently go to jail, come back out and make something of themselves, you know, or go through the justice system, you know. I thank you for this project and your resilience. And my heart goes out to you and your father's, you know, loss. But, you know, thank you, sir, because this means a lot to me, seeing my son.
Well, you know, your name is Omar, right?
That's Jimmy.
Jimmy.
This is Jimmy.
Jimmy, everybody's got something to deal with. You know, everybody's got, you know, a cross that they have to bear. And we all do. And the question is that everyone has to answer, you know, based on what we got on our shoulders, is what you gonna do. Now, some people allow that cross to weigh them into the ground, but there's so many stories of, and that we don't see them enough, of these people who overcome whatever they have. I mean, it can be as you know, the brothers and sisters that are incarcerated and come out and still find a way, you know, or folks I remember a story of a young lady who was living with her mother and sister or brother in a storage unit at a U-Haul place, went to Harvard. You know, we hear stories of that like that, and I said I need to hear those stories to be encouraged, to know that it can be possible. Just because I'm in a bad situation today doesn't mean that's who I am for my future. So I when you asked me the question about black men, I love my black brothers, and we need to encourage each other and be big brothers and fathers to the fatherless, and big brothers to the brotherless, so that we can, as a people, lift ourselves up.
Jimmy, thank you so much for your phone call.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you.
Sure.
Amen.
Mr. Vance, I want to get back to your craft. And because, as I said at the beginning, I'm not necessarily one who was starstruck, but, you know, for me, and this, you know, personally, in my mind, you know, the famous people that I admire the most include, you know, performers and icons, people like yourself, Gladys Knight, Wynton Marcellus, Muhammad Ali. Okay. So, and I just find, as I said, your acting is incredible. If you'll allow me to do my ADA Carver imitation, you know, detective, I understand the histrionics, but bring me the evidence. How was that?
That was good. That was good.
I want to ask you about that, because in so many of the characters that you've played, there is that low octave emotion. And it's just fascinating to me. Are you playing yourself, or is that how the character is written?
It's always a combination of the two, because I am myself, you know, and I have to bring myself to the piece. And for Mr. Cochran, I was completely overwhelmed by the task at hand. You know, you pray that one day that you'll have the opportunity to do something like that kind of role, like a Tina Turner for my wife, for Ray Charles, for Jamie Foxx. You hope that one day you'll be able to, and then it presents itself to you, and the question is, are you ready? Mm-hmm. What do you do first? What do you do second? Should you listen to tape? Should you watch all that you can? What should you, you know, I remember I did Athol Fugard play, a South African author, writer, white author, back in the late 80s, early 90s, and I played a South African character in this play, My Children, My Africa, and I don't know nothing about South Africa. I went to Harvard and Yale, and I'm a black boy from Detroit. So, you know, do I start the accent work first? Do I start the historical research first? Do I start the lines first? What do I do? And so that's when you have to sit and pray about what is the way on this particular project? What's my way in? And I remember I was doing that project, and I couldn't figure out the transitions in between a 10-minute monologue that I had. Each of the three characters had 10-minute monologue in the play somewhere throughout the play, and I couldn't figure out my transitions in between. And I was asking Athol, I need some help. I don't know. I can't figure this out. And he wouldn't help me. Wouldn't or couldn't or whatever it was. And so he said, come on, man, we need this. We need this now. We're just about to start previews. And I'm standing on the stage, swaying back and forth, basically, literally swaying back and forth, trying to figure out whether am I going to walk out of this theater or am I going to stay? I was trying to decide it. And as I was going back and forth, I found my way in. I found the little boy, as he, and I found my transitions, and I finished, and he said, "That's it, man, that's it." And I walked off the stage because I said, and I said in my spirit, "You did not help me at all. And you left me left me there." And sometimes, as Lloyd Richards, the famous, God rest his soul, the director and our dean of the first African-American dean of the Yale Drama School, said, sometimes you got to direct yourself. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you just have to stand on what you think is right and just go for it. And that's what Franklin does in 61st Street. He stood on what he thought in his spirit was the right thing to do. Was it right for my wife? No. Was it right for, you know, the police department? No. Was it right for, at the time, the community? Maybe not. A lot of people didn't, you know, maybe they didn't believe in what I was doing, but the character was doing. But, you know, there's a time in everyone's life when you have to stand. And it's a lonely, potentially a lonely thing where you just have to, between you sitting on the edge of your bed at 2 a.m, it's just you and your God.
Mm-hmm.
And all of us have those moments where, you know, Martin Luther King had his in his kitchen, where he realized that it was him and God is asking him to take on this mantle, and he had to take it, recognizing that he probably would be killed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, you know, we all have to come to that point, and we all pray that, oh, man, I hope it never happens to me that I have to make that decision. But, you know, if you live long enough, old folks used to say, if you live, you just keep living, baby. Just keep living. You're going to come to it. Just keep living.
Besides the obvious, you know, feeding the family and keeping a roof over your head, what does acting do for you?
You know, it allows me to, because life is all the grays and the colors and the gradations. It's like being a jazz musician. You mentioned Wynton.
Mm-hmm.
Wynton's a very dear friend. My wife and I just did their gala, 25th anniversary gala celebration at the Jazz Lincoln Center. The big space there. I forget what it's called, the Rose Hall, I believe it is. And, you know, jazz musicians, and it was funny because we were, you know, before the actual, you know, presentation, we did the actual rehearsal, a huge show, dance, music, all kinds, singing, we were doing them, and Angela and I were doing the hosting duties, and so all the cues were based on, you know, what the performers are doing and all. And, you know, there's a script that we have, and a very detailed script, and Angela and I are reading the script, and Wynton says, you know, in a minute, hey, you know, Court, Angela, you know,
that's him.
It's too long. This is like three or four. And he's on the stage doing his riffs and his rehearsing his band and everything. And he said, I'm gonna cut it. And I'll give it back to you. I said, but you know, in my spirit, I went, but when you gonna do that? We're not gonna get it before we got to do the show. So we're gonna get a brand new script, and we got to just go with it when we go. And Andrew and I, we know how to roll like this. We're like, okay, give it to us when we finish our makeup and hair and, you know, put our clothes on, tuxedo, my penguin suit, and get, you know, ready. And, you know, we got it with 5 minutes to go, walking out on the stage, new dialogue, and we were doing the jazz set with them. Everybody was going with it. And it ended up being the most amazing show because that's jazz. And in life, you got to be willing I always say performers are the most courageous people, going out on that stage in front of 1,200 people, you know, not really knowing what you're doing, but flowing what everybody else is doing, and eventually you have the confidence that it'll end up in the right place. And if it don't, you got to roll with that too.
But is the craft for you? Is this, as I said, is it a spiritual thing for you? Is it a release? Is it, how would you describe it?
It's a spiritual thing. It is a ministry. At base core, it is an absolute ministry that you're going out there and the lights go down and you take people somewhere. I'm in church and I come into church in one way and the pastor takes us. The music takes us and gives us something to keep us going to the next week, to the next Sunday. And that's what we're doing. That's what we do. Some people, their lives are shifted by what happens on that stage, by what happens on that screen. And we you know, the arts are the things that transform people oftentimes. You know, the artists can say things that politicians can't say or do.
Right.
You know, music is the same thing. Music does that. You know, we locate ourselves by where we were based on the song that was on. Light My Fire, Light My Fire. I'm 68 back in Chicago. My mother and father took a trip. You know, Jose Feliciano. I hear his voice. I hear that song, and I'm back in Chicago, 68, 8 years old with my sister. So that's what music is. It is a spiritual thing. And we don't think of it like that. We think of, you play music. Okay. But when you need to go somewhere, I tell you, Johnny Mathis.
Yeah.
And Ella Fitzgerald. And, you know, there's a lot of babies made on their music. Come on now.
Mm-hmm.
Back in the 50s, and they couldn't be in them clubs. They couldn't be in them hotels. But, there was a lot of white folks made some babies on their music. You know, so it is all of that. It's a spiritual thing. It's a technical thing. It is a craft. And you have to allow yourself to on certain times. It's all of them at the same time, and you've got to allow yourself to be able to close your eyes and go. Your homework. I always say you do your homework and you leave it at home. And then when you get on that sound stage, you get on that stage, you have to synthesize everything and then let it go through you and see where it goes. And I think that's where, you know, the people have gifting. Anybody can act. Anybody can sing. Anybody can play that trumpet or that guitar or that cello, but there's only one Yo-Yo Ma, baby.
Yeah.
There's only one Ella Fitzgerald. There's only one Louis Armstrong. There's only one Wynton. There's only one Terrence Blanchard. So, you know, there's only one Meryl Streep. There's only one Angela Bassett. And because that's a gifting that takes over. And so, you know, I just try to serve. And by serving, what happens, happens. Sometimes we do things and we wake up and go, ooh, where was that? Where did that go?
Where did that come from?
Where did that come from? And yeah. So I got to allow the spiritual to be there as well and to know that I'm not all that. I couldn't have done that by myself. I didn't do that by myself. You know, when you add my gift and the director's gift and the cinematographer's gift and the, you know, the camera person's gift and all of a sudden, and the marketing person's gift, you may end up with something.
Mm-hmm. I wanted in the last few minutes, because I only have a little bit of time, and I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you about this. You've been in this business long enough to see the evolution of Black Hollywood, and now we have, you know, the Tyler Perrys, the Issa Raes, and you know, just the incredible talent that has not followed the. What some may consider the traditional route, and they've not only broken through, but they are shining. How would you characterize what we're seeing now in what people would call, you know, Black Hollywood? Is this the time for the more growth for people of color in Hollywood?
I just think we need to keep growing. My wife and I, our production company, Bass Advanced Productions, we're segueing from just doing, and you know, so many people, you know, we're getting to it late, you know, but Issa, you mentioned Issa Rae, and you know, so many people have recognized that the power is in the producing, and the development. And, you know, we want to get to the place where we leverage our names to be able to do projects that mean something to us. And that allows us to tell stories that are important to us. And, you know, so it's all about, you know, when you think about it, Hollywood was run by Jewish folks
mm-hmm.
doing films about white Anglo-Saxon Protestants.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people came to this country, you know, from Eastern Europe, and they, you know, they changed their names. Kirk Douglas's name wasn't Kirk Douglas. You know, you Google his name was, and I believe he's Eastern European Jewish man.
Mm-hmm.
And so Hollywood was putting out images and stories about white folks and about their and as black people, you know, we didn't have our images out there, and so but we still were able to, you know, put ourselves in somehow schizophrenically. You know, I'm Rhett Butler. You know, I'm Vivian Leigh in Gone with the Wind. We had to put ourselves in, you know, and do that for years, because that's all we had. You know, watching it up in in-person heaven.
Yeah.
You know, to coin a phrase. You know, the tide changed and turned, and we, you know, on the backs of brothers and the blaxploitation films and all kind of other brothers and sisters who, you know, were able to get out there and, you know, and put a see us, and those movies came out, forget about what the content was. We saw ourselves.
Yes, indeed. Yeah.
And we were able to transition to where we are now, so that it's just an evolution. The next phase is the next phase. Thank God for Tyler Perry. Thank God for, you know, for all these people, you know, Will Smith, and being able to do the things, irrespective of the slap, being able to do the things that he was able to do, and set the stage for others to follow him and them. So I celebrate us for where we've come from, and I know that just means that we've got further to go. We've got other places to go.
Well, I celebrate you. There is only one Courtney B. Vance. I salute you. I'm going back to my Law & Order reruns over the weekend. And, of course, 61st Street, I'm going to watch that as well. We also salute your wonderful wife as well. Take care. God bless. And thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, sir.
All right. That is the Daily Drum for this Friday, April 29th. For News Director Renee Nash, reporters Millette Green, Bramante Bryant, producer Candace Wilson, and engineer Bobby Adams, I'm Harold Fisher. Good night, and have a wonderful weekend.